go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott Benjamin.
And I'm Ben Bolin.
Hey, Ben. Today we've got... You know how we love to talk about racing?
Yes.
Well, this is kind of a different angle on racing, I think. It's not about a race that's going to happen this weekend or next week or even, 10 years from now, but close to that.
Yeah, it's not even about a race that will happen. This is about a race or races that might happen.
Race of the mind. Well, maybe not. This is more like a designer challenge, right?
Yes.
This is the idea that that was given to... some groups of people from different manufacturers, some big manufacturers. We'll talk about those in a moment. But the question that was posed to them, and it's an article on our site, exactly titled this, "What will race cars look like in 2025?
In the future, 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 future.
Nice.
Oh, thanks. We're going for the dramatic thing.
And you know what? The thing is, this is a great question because, man, there's just no other... arena, I think, where things change so dramatically year after year.
Or where things are as influential on later car models.
I mean, look at horses. Going back to the turn of the century, they haven't changed much in design to present day. Okay, fine. Okay. Good enough.
Good enough.
You know what I'm getting at here. Cars,
right.
Let me tell you, they've changed dramatically. They change dramatically year after year. You could look at Formula One, and see tremendous changes year after year. Same with IndyCar. You could look at rally car racing, whatever. There's clearly an evolution here that happens, and they're asking them to step beyond that. Like, what's the next big step? What are we going to look at in, 2 decades from now?
Yes, and the they in these sentences that we're making are the LA Auto Show Design Challenge. This is an annual event that always ask these sort of out-of-the-box questions. For example, in 2012, they're asking what the police car, the law enforcement vehicle of the future will look like, what it'll look like in 2025.
Mm-hmm.
Again, now, Scott, you and I were talking off the air that as we get closer and closer to 2025, they might need to start asking about a different year because it'll be awkward when it's 2024.
I think so. Maybe bump it up to, 2050.
That seems
like
fair.
That. Yeah,
but
it does.
So it's not always a race car design challenge. However, the manufacturers in this design challenge, this was the fifth challenge that the LA Auto Show had. They are some of the biggest names in car makers, and they came up with some really unorthodox stuff.
Yeah, exactly. They, not only were talking about like materials and safety innovations and aerodynamics and, things that we've kind of already proved along the way or tested and created along the way. This is kind of taking it to the next level. So let's say that you're talking about like the Audi team.
Yeah.
They've got a car that they designed a car for this challenge that is capable of supposedly. Now this is the great thing.
Yeah,
this is all. You could just make your car do anything you want, but you have to have a design that relates to this. You have to be able to show it somehow
in
design. Easy enough, right?
Easy enough.
Fantasy world, I guess.
Right.
But their car, like Audi's car. It imagines a race that has banks and tunnels and cars that can invert themselves and then pass on the roof of the tunnel, which is fascinating to
Wild.
Me because we've heard about the Formula One cars that are capable of driving upside down at certain speeds because of downforce.
Right.
They're taking it to the next level and saying that of course they can. All cars are going to be able to do this. Let's see this in a race.
Yeah, and this is something that's key here because when the design challenge posed the question, what will race cars look like in 2025? There's also an unspoken implied question. What will racing become in 2025? Now, of course, at this point, there are simply no tracks designed for these sorts of audacious ceiling crossovers,
In some cases. In some cases, the teams went a little more conventional.
Right.
And they said, okay, we're going to make a car that, let me just scan down here. But Toyota, they made a car that was capable of speeds of like up to 350 miles an hour.
Right. And they kept the same rules of Le Mans.
Yeah, exactly. So, it's like a what do you want to call it? Like an endurance race, I suppose.
Yeah.
An overnight type race. But, imagine traveling 350 miles an hour next to another vehicle. That's like, you know, Bonneville Salt Flat speeds,
mm-hmm.
but you're racing against somebody on a closed circuit track.
And would you be next to them for very long going
probably,
that fast?
Probably not. I wouldn't think so. But, you know, all the manufacturers, there's, you know, Audi, BMW, mm-hmm. GM, Honda, Mazda, you know, the list goes on. Volkswagen.
Yeah. Mitsubishi.
Mercedes-Benz, they all had entries in this, and they all had a dramatically different approach to this.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, take, for instance, like the Mazda team, they went with electric cars.
Right, so they kept the same sort of racing format, but their question was, what if all the race cars of 2025, or what if a majority of them are electrically powered?
Mm-hmm. You know? And then, like GM, they imagined something called an eco-triathlon racing series, which I'm not exactly sure what that's all about, but I have to dig into that one, because...
Mm-hmm.
It seems similar to what they're mentioning for Honda's team, because Honda did something completely different.
Yes, Honda did perhaps one of the most ambitious designs. So they said, why don't we have a race wherein the drivers must circumnavigate the globe, which already sounds crazy, right?
Sure.
In 24 hours, in the same vehicle... On land, air, and sea.
Wait. Same vehicle.
Same ride.
Land,
the whole time.
Air, and sea?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh. That's amazing. I would love to see the vehicle that can do that. I mean, that would be – see, now that's something really cool.
Yeah.
Turns into a boat, turns mm-hmm. into a car, turns into a plane. And we've got, you know, the plane cars there, the flying cars that I hate.
I know,
but,
buddy.
but
there are also amphibious cars.
In race car form?
Mm-hmm.
In a race situation, might be kind of cool to watch.
It's definitely more feasible
mm-hmm.
because remember one of our main problems, our primary beef, I would say, with flying cars is that in a traffic situation or in an accident situation
yeah.
that you're likely to encounter with a daily driver, this just adds a whole new level of potential for disaster.
Yeah, you know what? You know, this reminds me. Have you seen the rally? You've seen the rallies before, where like they're off road for a long, long time in the desert.
Right.
Suddenly they're on road and they're driving through a small town, but they're going 80, 90 miles an hour through mm-hmm. the small town. Everybody's kind of buzzing around. There's still regular vehicles on the road. They're parked. Maybe there's people, you know, in lawn chairs watching.
Right.
But imagine a race around the globe. How would you ever prepare a course for something like that? I mean, it'd have to go through some desolate areas.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you know, you're not going to encounter any traffic, hopefully, you know, across the oceans or hopefully in the air. But I guess that's something you have to worry about.
Yeah, and this would be a pioneering race, too. We can't forget how in some ways this would closely parallel some of the first road trips, because we simply don't have an entire world-spanning racetrack. I mean, how would you plan that?
Yeah, there's nothing to compare it to at this point. But, you know, another thing that we do – well, one team that kind of took an angle that we do have something to compare it to is Volkswagen.
Yeah.
They designed kind of what they said is a conventional Baja racetrack.
Mm-hmm.
So what I just mentioned, the off-road trucks and, you know, cars.
Right.
But the rule is that you can only use 10 gallons of fuel for the entire race.
Yeah, 37.9 liters for our friends abroad.
So this is dramatically different from you know what you would find in a typical Baja race where you stop for refueling and
mm-hmm.
you know you move on. You've got massive engines that produce a lot of power. This seems like it seems like a lot of teams have taken this kind of eco-friendly angle in this.
Right, like GM, as we mentioned before.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one thing that's really interesting about this stuff is that all of these solutions or all these questions are really just logical extrapolations of current trends.
Mm-hmm.
So we see, even when we see something like switching to the ceiling of a racetrack to pass a competitor, it still is based on some solid engineering that leads us to think this may be plausible, or maybe not even plausible, maybe just possible.
Maybe, but well, then how do you explain BMW's entry?
I knew it. Get out of my head. Yeah. So BMW, their hydrogen-powered vehicle.
Sure, which is kind of unusual. I mean, mm-hmm. there are hydrogen-powered fuel cell cars out there right now, believe it or not. But they're very expensive. They're very few and far between.
And as we've talked about before, one of the big obstacles for a lot of alternative vehicles or alternative powered vehicles is that there's not enough of an infrastructure. Mm-hmm. Where are the hydrogen refueling stations,
for instance? Not necessary in this case because it's a race car, but
right.
But you look at the one that comes to mind is the Honda FCX Clarity, I think is the name of it.
Oh, yeah, good call.
But that's one that it's very expensive. You can only lease it, mm-hmm. and it's really, really high price. It's something not for everybody. And again, refueling is the main problem. Not the case for the BMW entry, though, because we're talking about a race situation. And the crazy thing is they made their hydrogen-powered car like a salt flat racer, which is really cool, and one of the old-style salt flat racers.
Yeah.
The belly tanks where they use I'm reading here, but the barbecue lids and oil barrels.
Right.
That's like the main body component. So this is kind of a cobbled-together race car that runs on very new technology. Mm-hmm. And maybe even more interesting than that, did you read about the co-pilot?
What? No, this is new. Tell me about the co-pilot.
The co-pilot. A lot of teams apparently had in their design that, of course, this is a race situation. A lot of them are long-distance races. They have a co-pilot.
Mm-hmm.
Rally car drivers have a navigator that reads maps and, signals and tells them when to turn, et cetera. Well, BMW's co-pilot, Ben, get ready for this. It's a goldfish.
What? Wait?
It's a goldfish. I think it's just a tongue-in-cheek type thing.
Okay.
Here's my co-pilot is a goldfish. And they really had a goldfish in their design, that sat next to the driver. And they claimed that was the co-pilot. But I thought it was kind of funny. But, nothing to it, really.
Well, this idea of a co-pilot is something really cool. It brings up a point that I wanted to talk with you about on the air.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we know, Scott, that autonomous vehicles or driving software, for lack of a better word, is becoming more and more feasible. Now, Google and DARPA have both reached some huge milestones recently mm-hmm. with their artificially driven cars, for lack of a better word. Do you think that we could be approaching a future in racing where there's machine and man piloting the vehicle?
Machine and man. Not in the near future, only because on race cars, typically you find that they remove any semblance of computer control.
Any CPU stuff. Yeah.
There's very, very little. There's no anti-lock brake system. There's no power steering. There's no power options on anything. Right now, it's pretty much pure man machine.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think they're going to be giving up control like that anytime soon. Now, there may be, looking way in the future, again, speculating.
Yeah, spitballing.
Exactly. Would it be kind of neat to see autonomous cars racing against each other on a track where maybe somebody else – now, I said autonomous. They're mm-hmm. controlling themselves, but maybe somebody else controlling them like a life-size remote control vehicle?
That would be so cool.
That might be pretty interesting to see.
Mm-hmm.
But imagine cars that are programmed ahead of time and just kind of let go to run on their own. I wonder how that would work because that environment changes so quickly
mm-hmm.
and you have to react so fast. That's the human element.
Mm-hmm.
Would they be able to accommodate that? Would they be able to determine, this is not the place to pass. I'm going to wait till the next straight and then only if these situations work out in the way that they should.
I think that's a great point because, there are a couple things to unpack from here. First, to immediately respond to that question, eventually, we would be in sort of a John Henry situation, fighting mm-hmm. the John Henry, the myth, of course, of the man who was one of the fastest track layers going against a machine that could lay track as well.
Digging through a tunnel or through a mountain, rather.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we could be in a situation like that in real life with autonomous vehicles at some point. We could be in a situation where the world's best human driver is going up against what was that computer that played chess? Deep Blue?
I think it was.
We could have a Deep Blue situation. Now
that's an interesting thought, Ben. A man versus machine, in the purest sense, I guess, there's no driver in the other vehicle, but they're equally matched. See who does better.
And I know it is a bit of a sidebar, but the other thing is what is the nature of the sport of racing? I'm going to argue that more important even than the equipment is the fact that there are human drivers in there and it is one driver's skill, reflex, and experience and, to a degree, luck against that of another human driver. So is it unsportsmanlike to have too much technology helping you out? You know, that's a little philosophical.
I'm totally on board with the driver's skill that wins the race, because you could put two people in identically prepared cars and you know, one's going to come out victorious. The one with the most skill, the most experience, it's not going to be the luckiest one typically. Mm-hmm. I mean, that happens, sure, but you know, an unprepared driver someone who doesn't have any experience, unexperienced, right, versus somebody who has plenty of track experience at, you know, that race course in that vehicle, et cetera, they're going to do far better than somebody else.
Yeah, not a chance.
You know, it's kind of funny that they're kind of getting back to the co-pilot thing, because that reminds me almost of like the ride-along mechanics that they used to have in racing.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
And in a round-the-world race, I would think that you would want to have a mechanic along with you, right?
You would. I think it would be a very, very bad choice not to have one.
In that way, I mean, without the support crews or whatever, mm-hmm. if you had a ride along mechanic, just as they did in the early days of racing, mm-hmm. It seems like that's kind of a regression almost.
It is, and it's a regression that is necessary, because let's keep in mind, just to take it back to some of the technology powering these vehicles, a lot of this technology is going to be relatively new to these environments. I mean, Toyota's car has photovoltaic panels on it. Mm-hmm. A solar-powered racing car, even partially, is such a new thing. If it's going against another car that doesn't have photovoltaic panels or doesn't depend on solar power, then you will want a mechanic with it.
Okay, but you know what? I know someone's going to write in about this.
Right,
they have had, you know, the sun races.
They have, but those are just solar power cars against each other.
Yes, and primarily, let's get this straight.
It's primarily exhibition, yeah.
And these are engineering exercises.
Right.
That, you know, it's one person. They can only travel when the sun is up, and there's mm-hmm. they're actually kind of quick, but specific conditions need to be met, and they're very, let's just say, they're very delicate vehicles.
Right. These are not going to be at 24 hours of lemons anytime soon.
No, I don't think so, no. So, and you know what? Any cells that are on top of them may be powering optional equipment.
Right.
You know, or powering, you know, extra equipment that requires electricity at that point. I don't think that they're going to be, you know, solely powered by solar.
No, I don't think they'll be at this point either.
Not in the near future.
Maybe not even by 2025.
I don't think so.
So this stuff that we're seeing is really, I hate to toot our horn, Scott, but this is kind of validating this article, because it focuses on some of the things that we focused on in earlier episodes, including material science, the necessity of carbon fiber for mm-hmm. performance in the future. It focuses on some of the alternative energy that, I will say again, I know it's not the most popular opinion, but we are rightly skeptical of some of this stuff, and we're not saying it's bad. We're just saying it's very easy to get caught up in the hype before the science and the engineering are solid. You know?
Sure.
And then it also shows us that the nature of racing itself in terms of the format may change, but I wanted to bring up the artificial intelligence idea, because that's what is not really mentioned in this mm-hmm. article. And I think that it's a good move for the manufacturers to keep the focus on the human driver.
I think it is, too. I think that's the heart and soul of racing. And Ben, I think beyond 2025 even, I think it still will be.
Yes. Well, I certainly hope so, because, you know, I recently saw Terminator again. And that Skynet stuff just scares me.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's a terrifying movie. Could be.
It could be. But for now, let us reassure all the race fans listening that the big names in car manufacturing are working on some tremendously thrilling innovations, and your favorite race car drivers are probably not going to go away. Your favorite race car companies will continue, but they will be doing some astonishing stuff.
Mm-hmm. And I'm actually kind of interested to see what comes out of this year's competition with the police car technology, and see what the designers come up with. Because I'll be honest, I think police cars could use a serious revamp at this point. I mean, they need something now rather than later.
Yeah, sooner rather than later. And, of course, to be fair, before we get the emails, guys, we understand that these are essentially concepts. These
sure
are very, very much like concept cars.
Mm-hmm.
And concept cars, as we know, don't have the most success when it comes to becoming a production car.
But parts of them do. Maybe not the entire thing. Parts of them do. And that's what, you know, I'm really hoping that some of the stuff from the police vehicle competition comes out. You know, they'll adapt some of that technology
mm-hmm
or some of those ideas because police cars these days, I mean, they really need some help, I think.
Yeah.
It's very old school right now, and they really need to step it up.
So let's end on a couple of questions, and we
mm-hmm
would like to hear the answers from you. What would you like to see in racing in the future? What do you think of the idea of alternative power racing vehicles, of changing tracks? What do you think of racing around the world? And what do you think about artificial intelligence in racing? Scott, you had some stuff you saw earlier?
You know what? I've got one quick thing, and it's not even anything all that dramatic, but I found it really interesting. Not the usual stuff Scott sees, I'll tell you that. I was driving to work the other day, and I was in downtown Roswell, and I saw a city bus pulled over into a parking lot that normally wouldn't be there, of course. You know, it was running its normal route. Had people in it. There's a police car behind it. And I thought, and initially thought, oh, my gosh, there's an accident with the city bus.
Oh, no.
The officer was writing a ticket to the city bus driver while people were on board. He was standing at the big window on the side,
oh,
looking
wow
up to the driver with, you know, ticket book in hand, writing a citation. I've never seen that happen before. I don't even know what the citation would be for, you know, in heavy traffic like this. Possibly maybe ran a red light.
Yeah.
I don't think speeding could have been a possibility just because of where we were.
Improper turning, maybe.
Maybe. But, I mean, can you imagine it being on that bus and then, the driver receiving a ticket and having to wait? Because you're taking that, you know, to bypass all the traffic and all the confusion and congestion and everything.
Theoretically.
And there you are waiting for the driver to receive a ticket.
So even bus drivers get tickets. I've never seen that.
You know, that's the thing. That's why I'm bringing it up, because I've never seen that happen before. I didn't even know it was really possible, but I suppose, I mean, they share the road with everybody else.
Yeah. I wonder if they cut off the police officer.
It could be. Or so maybe there's a mechanical condition that they were citing them for.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Taillights out or something. But it seems like that would be just reported to the main office. So I'm trying to figure out what this would be, or if anybody has ever seen a bus driver receiving tickets or been on a bus where somebody, you know, the driver has received a ticket
wow
for maybe speeding or improper lane use or whatever it happens to be, but I just have never seen it, and I figured I'd mention it here and just see if anybody has anything to say about it.
Man, that's baffling.
Yeah.
What a bad day for that bus driver.
It was a little weird, and I figured I'd just make a quick note.
Yeah.
And again, like I said, not the usual stuff Scott sees, but intriguing.
Yes, so we're going to go ahead and head out for another episode that you guys will hear later on. In the meantime, let us know what you think about the future of racing or what you think the future of racing should be. And tell Scott and I if you have ever seen a bus driver get a ticket. We really did not know this could happen. You can tell us about this on Facebook. You can give us a holler at Twitter. Keep it short, of course, because it's Twitter. I don't know. Twitter jokes? Never mind. And you can always send us an email directly at
carstuff@discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com.